From NPR in Los Angeles, I'm Tavis Smiley. Civil rights legislation codified into law 40 years ago largely resulted from a nonviolent movement. But in subsequent years, a new movement was born based on armed self-defense. The Black Panther Party was declared by the FBI's J. Edgar Hoover to be the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States. But was this an accurate picture? Our own Philip Martin examines the portrayal of the Black Panthers in the 60s and now.
When Jan Williamson agreed to show a collection of photographs depicting the Black Panther Party here at the 18th Street Art Center, her mother had only one reaction.
Why are you doing that?
Jan Williamson is the center's co-director.
I come from a California Republican family. The Black Panthers in my household were considered outrageous radicals, crazy, scary people. It's a big disconnect for her.
But it was precisely because her mother and a great deal of the public seemed to know so little about the Black Panther Party, says Williamson, that she accepted an invitation to display the 45 black and white images at the 18th Street Center.
My name is Tim Wright, and I'm the curator of photography at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. I also facilitated bringing the Black Panther show to 18th Street Arts Center in Santa Monica, because I've always felt that this is a tremendous body of work.
Tim Wright organized this exhibit, and is the author of Perkle Jones, California Photographs. Some of the best-known images of the Black Panther Party were taken by Perkle Jones and his wife, Ruth Marion Baruch. But Ride, pointing out one image after another, says the Perkle Baruch collection of images vary in their social texture and message.
If I were to pick a Perkle picture from this group, I would be looking at things more like these two images. This range of people, from a man in a white shirt with a black tie to a man in a Nehru jacket to with a beret, but it's a community that's come together, and basically it's an African-American crowd with one white cameraman filming the action.
And peering closely into the Perkle Baruch Black Panther images, taken over a four-month period in the summer of 1968, the photographs seemed to come alive.
We've shown them as human beings, and it's a flip side of what was in the press of how they were portrayed at that time.
Photographer Perkle Jones is now 90 years old and living in Mill Valley, California. His wife and collaborator, Marion Baruch, died in 1997. They were both middle-aged radicals during the Summer of Love, as 68 was called, members of the Peace and Freedom Party. Bothered by what some saw as one-dimensional media portrayals of the Panthers, they set out with two cameras to show multiple sides of this growing movement. Perkle says their radicalism was informed by their past.
I'm from a Southern family, and I had one of my brothers was a member of the KKK. I'm the only one practically in the family that didn't think the way they did. And my wife, of course, being Jewish, she had problems and when she was in college of even finding a place to live because she was Jewish.
Perkle Jones studied landscape photography under the mentorship of Ansel Adams. But rather than shooting sweeping panoramas of American beauty in 1968, he and Baruch saw up close and personal what many newspaper editors at the time could only dream of.
One of the questions they ask us, how did you happen to photograph the Panthers? Our photographers have to wear football helmets to go out and photograph them.
Perkle says it was simple. They were asked, specifically by Kathleen Cleaver, who at the time was the Panthers' communications secretary.
The Black Panther Party had its own media. We put out a newspaper, we put out pamphlets, and we put out an enormous number of posters. Perkle Jones and Ruth Marion Baruch's photographs, those are the images that people have in their mind.
They were mostly images of defiance that began to gel in the public mind as early as 1966, when the Black Panther Party was born in Oakland. The Panthers actually began as a fledgling movement in Mississippi, and was adopted by two young black men in California, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale. Their reputation as a group that would fight back took root in the spring of 1966 during a gun battle with police that ended in the wounding of three cops and two Panthers, and the death of another. One unidentified Panther spoke for the group at the time.
Black people are now to organize in a fashion where we have maximum retaliation against all forms of racist, police brutality, and attacks.
What changes have there been in the Black Panther Party since the gunfight last weekend?
What you mean, what changes? We have a black man that's dead, murdered by pigs. That's a change.
David Hilliard, former Minister of Information, served 4 years in prison for activities connected to his membership in the Black Panther Party. He spoke to NPR several years ago.
We got caught up into that imagery, and it was very, very hard to get out of that because the press always played up the whole idea about the guns and us being thugs.
But if newspapers and TV at the time played up the gun-toting image, the Panthers did little at times to discourage its propagation. Here's the Panthers' Eldridge Cleaver, referring to the police at a rally in Oakland, which was photographed by Perkle Jones.
Either you are going to withdraw your oppressive forces from the black community, or we're going to start shooting.
Tufts University historian Gerald Gill says it's important to keep in mind that in the mid to late 60s, the nation was still dealing with the nonviolent phase of the civil rights movement.
So any organization that is composed of male members dressed in a distinct quote-unquote uniform, where its male members are carrying weapons in the minds of many individuals who are used to hearing, for example, less threatening phrases from Martin Luther King, were perceived perhaps as being quote-unquote dangerous. That would allow the media to begin to define the Black Panther Party rather than allow the party to be able to define itself.
And many mainstream newspaper editorials in the mid to late 60s characterized the Black Panther Party as the flip side of the Ku Klux Klan. Kathleen Cleaver, who now teaches law at Emory University, says nothing could be further from the truth.
They, the government, the mass media, portrayed us as racists who hated white people. It had almost nothing to do with who we really were.
Cleaver says the Black Panther Party, for example, had coalitions and alliances with white, Asian, and Latino organizations. She says also missing from the coverage was news about the Panthers' free breakfast programs, dental, and medical programs, albeit limited in their reach. But most conspicuously absent in the public mind, she says, in thinking about the photographs now in exhibit in Los Angeles, is the human side of the Black Panthers.
The thing that most come to mind when I look at the photographs are the young woman holding a baby. She was like 16 years old, had just had a baby, and how tender and gentle she was, and how she was killed a few years after that. What I get out of that, not so much the famous people, because they have tons of pictures, but what I gain from it much more is the love and the tenderness and the community and the connections and how much we matter to each other.
More than a dozen Black Panthers and several police officers died in shootouts or related incidents between 1966 and 1973. Tufts University historian Gerald Gill says the picture of the Black Panther Party has undergone revision in recent years.
Men and women who are in the Black Panther Party have gone on to a wide array of careers, and it goes beyond just the visual impressions that so many people have about men in berets and black jackets and women standing in the background. And that would be the true legacy of the Black Panther Party.
Back at the 18th Street Gallery in Santa Monica, curator Tim Ride ponders a question he's just been asked. Were Perkle Jones, Ruth Baruch's portrayals of the Black Panther Party propaganda or art at the time they were taken? And what is the relevance of those factors in how the party is perceived now?
It's still art. Is it still propaganda? I don't know that it is. More importantly, it's a really great collective memory. It's a great object lesson that indeed there was a time and a place when people did band together. There was a time and a place when people could affect change.
For the Tavis Smiley Show, I'm Philip Martin.
Several of the Jones-Baruch photos of the Panthers can be viewed on our website by clicking on tavis@npr.org. As we close, we want to dedicate this program to the Reverend Charles Williams, who died last week after a battle with prostate cancer. Reverend Williams was the charismatic founder and president of the Indiana Black Expo, the country's largest black expo, and he's credited with bringing the Indiana Black Expo to national prominence while creating new economic opportunities in black America and beyond. Reverend Charles Williams, buried today in Indianapolis. He was 56 years old. You can catch me tonight on TV on PBS, my guest, Aletha Adams of America Saves, as we continue our Road to Wealth series. Also, actor Taye Diggs. That's tonight on Tavis Smiley on PBS. To listen to this show or past shows over tapes and transcripts, visit NPR.org or call 877-NPR-TEXT. More information on what I'm doing is available at TavisTalks.com. The Tavis Smiley Show is a news and opinion program created by NPR and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Our theme music was composed by George Duke. I'm Tavis Smiley. This is NPR. Keep the faith.